half past nine.
Yes, sir. Find it really quite difficult to understand about this thing, really.
Well, take that horrible murder, for instance. Nothing anyone can do about the beggar.
But, Jimmy, if the police know who's done it, why on earth can't they arrest him?
Because, darling, the evidence is inconclusive.
You see, Mrs. Clinton, a man can only be tried once for any murder. And the police are reasonably certain that sooner or later he'll give himself away.
Or the missing link in the chain will be filled in. More soda, Sir Henry?
No, that's perfect, thank you.
Anyway, I'm sure that chauffeur did it. And I think it's scandalous he should get off scot-free. I wish I had the power of deciding the sentence.
And they say women are the gentler sex.
But it was a ghastly crime. That poor girl was only 16. You know, men like that narrow creature, they should be killed in some terrible way. Nothing would be too bad for them.
Biotex, the new soap and pre-wash powder, presents Beyond Midnight by Michael McCabe.
Dr. Peters for many years.
Did you know him well? And the girl?
Naomi Clinton's face was flushed with excitement. It's a strange thing. Women will often profess disgust or horror with a certain topic. And yet they cannot bring themselves to allow that topic to drop. Amazing. However...
Angela? Not very well, mind. She was one of the loveliest little things I ever saw. I could hardly believe it when I opened the papers and learned such a dreadful thing had happened to her.
And don't you think that chauffeur, Yarrow, did it?
Undoubtedly. But if the proof isn't conclusive, I'm afraid there's nothing anyone can do.
Don't worry, he'll do it again.
And next time, they'll get him.
But by then, one more human life will have been sacrificed needlessly.
Something should be done. Either the girl's father or the brother. Something, definitely.
This fellow Peters, her father, he isn't the Peters, is he?
He is.
What? The fellow who's done all these marvelous things with these thyroid experiments? Truth. Why does he choose to live in Wimbledon?
When you get older, a little peace and quiet are wonderful things.
If he hadn't lived so close to the common, his daughter might be alive today.
Well, what will happen to this man, Yarrow, now? Hard for him to get a job, eh?
Well, he'll probably start for a foreign country. Like the only thing left for him. But if he really did do it, he won't get off in the long run. He'll make a slip.
Yarrow. Something horrible about that name, son, isn't there? Yarrow.
Yarrow. What have you thought of doing?
Well, it's going to be a bit nasty, and I want me to get work, Dr. Peters. I thought of Canada or Australia.
You can still have your job with me, Yarrow.
You mean that, sir? Well, stay on? Well, what is marvellous of you, sir? Well, I never... Oh, thank you, sir. It's very, well, Christian after what's happened. And to think of what they accused me of. Oh, thank you, sir. It's a weight off my mind, I can tell you.
The trial and... the crowd afterwards.
Bravo, George! Bravo!
George Yarrow sat on the edge of his bed in the little room he rented at number 77, Elderton Road, Wimbledon. Yes, the court had been hostile, and the crowd outside the court had been worse. You see, the murdered girl was young, beautiful, popular. strange the way that girl, that one girl in the angry crowd, had called out, "Bravo, George." But there's a certain kind of woman who is attracted by a man like Yarrow.
Fantastic. The way old Peters has taken me back as his chauffeur. It's fantastic.
Yes, fantastic indeed. Yarrow had murdered Angela Peters. Oh, yes. And the father knew he had. But the evidence, inconclusive. George Yarrow was the sort of man the religious painters of old consigned happily to their fiery Hades. But people don't always get what they deserve. And now, after the trial, after everything, Dr. Peters had taken his chauffeur back into his employ. A Christian gentleman. After it had happened, his brain had cleared and his one thought had been to get away. He had killed the Peters girl, his big red hands had done it, and his one thought had been to escape. Fast. He had made for the nearest road where buses ran. It was ironical, you see, that as he reached the bus stop, a certain Nellie saw him. A young woman to whom he'd promised many things. A young woman who had showered him with her favors in the belief that he would marry her. Yarrow did not want to meet her, because he knew that he might want to pretend he had been far away that night.
George! George! George, wait! I want to talk to you!
What?
Why are you so cruel to me? You've got another girl, haven't you? George, I've got the right on you. George, I have!
I can't stop the bus. I've got to catch it.
George! George, wait! I've got to know! Why you dropped me? Who are you seeing?
One moment. George on the bus, not looking back. Nellie, the deserted one, middle of road, gesticulating, the shout, screech of brakes, and Nellie knew no more. Murdered his employer's daughter. Murdered her horribly. Nellie met him soon after the event and was run down by a car as she tried to run after George Yarrow's bus. George Yarrow did not look back. He had no idea of the accident. Court. Trial. Yarrow acquitted. And the case discussed over the entire country, just as Sir Henry and the Clintons discussed it earlier. Yes, things had gone very well for the chauffeur with the big red hands. Very well indeed. And a Christian gentleman, his employer, despite everything, was taking him back. Pity Nellie had seen him that night after it had happened. But no matter. Yarrow wasn't able to listen to a certain conversation, though, that took place in Dr. Peter's study. The evening of the same day that good doctor had offered to keep his chauffeur on.
Bring me a whiskey and soda, Smith, will you?
Yes, sir.
And Smith.
Sir.
Yarrow is returning to my service tomorrow.
Yes, sir. But
the verdict of the trial was not guilty. That being the case, Yarrow is innocent. That is all.
Yes, sir.
I need Yarrow in my service, Smith. You hear me? I need him.
Yes, sir.
Guilty. I know he is guilty. If only someone could be found who saw him near the scene. But reliable witnesses are wary of swearing away the life of a man. I can only wait. Sometime the missing link, the missing piece of evidence will turn up. Meanwhile, I will have him close by.
Annie Torr opened her eyes. She had always hated hospitals, but they were very kind to her in this one.
Don't worry, dear. It was a nasty knock, but you're going to be all right. Don't worry. Don't worry. Well, you're mending nicely. Here, I've brought you a paper.
Oh? What's the news?
Oh, nothing very much. A new Chevalier film coming on this week. Only some trouble in Bulgaria. Oh, and a horrible murder in Wimbledon.
Wimbledon? That's where I come from.
Some poor little girl. Horrible. And they don't know anything about who did it. Makes you wonder what kind of a world we live in, doesn't it?
Time passed. Nellie Torr grew stronger. It was in another paper, another set of headlines, another week, that Nellie read...
The man the police questioned, George Yarrow. George Yarrow.
And laboriously she read of the man's explanation, how he had been in Hyde Park at the time of the crime, his flat denial that he had been anywhere near the common. Nellie's mouth tightened into a thin line. Yarrow, the man who had jilted her. Yarrow. That was the day she had met him, the day the car had very nearly taken her life. The day. Oh, Yarrow, beware of an injured woman.
What must I do? The police? No, not getting mixed up with the law. Dr. Peters.
I feel like a new man. It's a lovely day today.
I thought you had flu.
I took a grandpa headache powder, and I'm world better.
When colds and flu are about, grandpa headache powders are what you need. Grandpa headache powders work fast because they dissolve almost immediately. Grandpa makes all those dreadful flu symptoms disappear quickly. So, whenever you're in pain, get fast relief. Get grandpa headache powder.
Ah, grandpa.
Just soak. Just soak in Biotex.
Stains, grass stains, collar and cuff stains, ingrained dirt, soil and grime. Out they come and you don't stir a finger.
Just soak. Just soak in Biotex.
Biotex with natural enzymes is the pre-wash powder with the most enzymes to give you extra pre-wash power. Absolutely no rubbing, no color loss, no fabric wear. Soaking in Biotex removes the stains and dirt that washing won't.
Just soak. Just soak in Biotex.
A week after leaving hospital, Nellie Torr, who had not yet contacted her former lover, George Yarrow, was passing the town cinema. The Chevalier film had come and gone, and now in its place was a fiery, tempestuous love story. Nellie stopped and examined the posters and watched the crowds coming out, mostly couples, young couples. Oh, there had been hijinks in the back, a few stalls of the three and sixes that night. She noticed a man and a girl who, arms still entwined, stood out from the rest. The girl was blonde and curvaceous. She was impressive, but loud. The man was tall and burly, and dressed to kill, as it were. His soft hat was tipped rakishly. His purple tie boasted a splendid pin, and his shoes were extravagantly pointed. It was, of course, George Yarrow.
Are you quite certain, Miss Torr, that it was Yarrow you saw that night? You could not have been mistaken.
No. If anybody ought to know George Yarrow, I should. I knew him most intimate at one time.
And you'll be prepared to sign a sworn statement to this effect?
If you say so. But I'm not wanting any police trouble, if you don't mind.
You won't have any. I can promise you that. For the present, you must tell nobody. The matter's perfectly safe in my hands. I have your word.
Yes. Remember, you promised that George shan't know as I've told you.
I've already given you my word. Thank you very much for what you've told me tonight, Miss Torr. Thank you very much indeed.
You rang.
Shut the door, Smith.
Is there anything I can get you, sir?
No, thank you. Just shut the door. I want to talk to you. How long is it you've been with me? 15 years?
16, sir.
You were fond of Miss Angela, were you not?
No. How I felt, sir. If she'd been my own
daughter.
Very
well. Listen to me. Where's my friend? My hand.
My hand, sir.
Ring Mr. Carter and say that I would be pleased if he would dine with me tomorrow. Say that it is very important. That is all, Smith. Good night.
Good night, Dr. Peters.
Yes, Tony Carter must be in on this. Tony Carter, heavyweight champion, Oxford University. He should manage it all right together with Smith and myself. An eye for an eye.
I don't know what's the matter with the lights, Yarrow. The doctor merely said he wanted you to look at them. That's all I know. Have you everything you need?
It's a bit much, isn't it? 11 o'clock at night fixing flaming lights. I had a date.
Never mind, Yarrow.
Hey, what is it?
Yarrow is here, sir. This is the light.
Good evening, Yarrow.
Ah, good evening, sir. You've got a light trouble, Smith said.
Put up your hands.
Huh?
And the chauffeur turned and faced a gentleman by the name of Carter, Oxford Blue, gentleman of leisure and of letters, a gentleman who held a leveled, lethal-looking revolver. It was pointed at Yarrow's stomach.
Oh, what's the game?
We know you for a murderer. Some days ago, the missing piece of evidence came into my hands. If I felt so inclined, I could hand you over to the police to hang by the neck until you were dead. But hanging is too good for a swine
take
like
it
you.
Easy, Peters, old man. Take it easy.
The handcuffs, Smith.
Tony, what's you doing to me? What was this?
And Peters came towards him, a pad in his hands.
Doctor.
Yarrow smelt the sweet, sickly odor. He was stifling, choking. He could hear low grunts, curses from the other men, but the sounds seemed very faint, far away. When he came to, Yarrow found himself lying on a long, white table. He tried to move his arm, but something held it like a vice. His legs were confined in a similar manner by a thick leather strap. He was naked, and above him burned a powerful light. He realized that he lay upon an operating table. He turned on his right, his clothes in a huddled heap on the floor.
Mustn't be scared. The old bastard is just trying to bluff me. Reckons he'll panic me into confessing my guilt. He hasn't got any staple at all. I'll get him for this.
I wish to say something, Yarrow.
You can't do this to me. I'll have the cops on to you.
I don't think you will, my friend. I'm not going to kill you. And if you go to the police, they will assuredly hang you. As certain as the month is March and the year 1932, they will
hang you.
But I didn't do it. I couldn't.
And once more, the great doctor, a man envied and admired by his colleagues, the doctor referred to by one James Clinton as the fellow who's done all these marvelous things with thyroid experiments, the doctor once more pressed the sickening pad over Yarrow's mouth. During the hours that followed, Yarrow suffered the agonies of a burning afterlife. At intervals, he fainted only to recover and endure once more agony. He never really knew what was happening to him. He lost all sense of time. The world had become for him a place of unbelievable torture. Peters worked as one possessed. All his vast knowledge of the human body was called upon to play a part. No one was permitted to come near the laboratory save Smith. The servants were told that Dr. Peters was engaged in important experiments and must not be disturbed. Months passed, and even the butler, who was forbidden access to the room, only came occasionally to bring his employer meals upon a tray. He also brought a tray for one other. It was March when Yarrow had disappeared, and now December held London in its frigid grip.
Doctor, I've brought...
The door into the room was open just a few inches, and through the aperture, Smith saw an almost unbelievable sight. Dr. Peter stood, whip in hand, over a creature which crouched on the floor, held by a chain and staple driven into the wall. The legs of the thing were bent and calloused. The arms hung ape-like with simian looseness from the wasted body. The face was the face of an old, old man, wrinkled with age and fear, but with a sly cunning lurking behind the roomy eyes. A thing of horror. A thing of pity.
By all the powers, merciful heaven! Is that... what's that? Yarrow!
Jimmy and Naomi Clinton sat impatiently in their motor car, a long low Invicta. They were late for lunch. The block of traffic in the Tottenham Court Road was exasperating. Their splendid motor car was overheating. 1932. Motor cars did tend to do things like overheat, even in December, in 1932. It was Naomi who saw the creature first.
Jim.
What?
Look.
What, for heaven's sake?
What a disgusting sight. What do you think it is?
Oh. From the show at Olympia, perhaps.
He looked at the grotesque figure ambling along the pavement, the jostling lunch hour crowds giving it as wide a berth as the pavements permitted.
Isn't it pathetic? Why are things like that allowed to live?
I don't know. Oh, we're going to be terribly late, darling.
And then the traffic block broke, and the Invicta slid forward. Naomi turned to look at the bizarre, ape-like figure, alone in the crowd, an outcast forever from its fellow creatures. She thought how terrible it was that it would never know human relationships. At best, only pity and commiseration, or laughter and curiosity. Inconsequentially, she thought of the murder still unsolved at Wimbledon.
ever find the Wimbledon murderer?
Hey, he got off scot-free. And no one knows what happened to him. Probably found it difficult to get a job there. But apart from that, he got off scot-free, yes. Look, when we get there, we're very late. Don't take too long to do your thing.
Their life went on. And Yarrow, stumbling down the Tottenham Court Road, did not really understand the looks of the passers-by. Yarrow, stumbling down the Tottenham Court Road, did not really understand anything anymore. Beyond Midnight is presented every Friday night at 9:30 by Biotex, the new soap and pre-wash powder. The program is adapted for broadcasting and produced by Michael McCabe.